Shot him in the back, 'cause it's a crime to be black. And don't you act surprised when it gets vandalized. So call it what it is, call it what it is, call it what it is, murder.
All right, everyone, you're here with the White Privilege Podcast. It's been about a week or two. Apologies for the delay. I'm your host, Very White Guy, and always I'm joined by Drumbeats for Peace. And this week we got a very special guest, Basra Masri, and we're going to be joined tomorrow by Sean Jordan as well. But you can find us at interracialjohn.com. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and various other places. Just search IRJ Presents White Privilege Podcast or Interracial John, or even just White Privilege Podcast. You'll find us on Stitcher, iTunes, podcast app, and a few other places. But today we're going to be discussing recent events. We've got Basra Masri talking about being hard on systems, soft on people, some of this narrative that we're hearing from police. But first, I want to welcome you, Basra, to the show. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Well, thanks for having me. You know what I'm saying? Honored to be with y'all.
Oh, no. The honor is all ours. All ours.
Absolutely. You've had quite a go, my friend. You've had quite a go.
Yeah, well, last few months have been real crazy, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of unexpected things, you know what I'm saying?
Life-changing.
People are coming into this, you know what I'm saying? And now you got this spokesperson role, which is kind of a little bit overwhelming, you know, dealing with all this now, you know what I'm saying? But we're dealing with it, and we're going through, you know, we're moving forward, you know what I'm saying? And it feels good, you know, that this is now a nationwide conversation, you know?
It's taken a while to have a conversation, Basim, in terms of what you guys were doing in the first 15, 20 days. It must have felt very lonely compared to what's happened across the country since then.
Yeah, you know, in those first 15, 20 days, you know, like, it was just basically, you know, just showing our, you know, we were just emotions, you know what I'm saying, running real high. We didn't know people were watching or were going to watch. We were just standing up for our community and the people that are being gunned down every day, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, ever since Mike Brown got killed, we've had multiple police murders since. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, this isn't a new trend. This is a trend that's been going on, you know. It's just that recent events have amplified it, you know. And thank God that it did.
When it started, Basim, how many were you on the street? I mean, there was the push there for a spell, of course, in the beginning. And then it was like, for me, as well as I could tell just by Twitter, it felt like there was like 3-4 weeks in there when it was just maybe 20 of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 15-20 of us that were.
Isn't that
not
crazy?
Led.
I mean, there were 20 yeah. of you keeping a movement alive for almost a month, and now yeah. across the country, you've got hundreds of thousands of people that are woke. Do you ever think about the enormity of that, of what historical change you are a grassroots, ground floor participant of? Because I'm talking to you.
I mean, that's crazy, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, yeah, like I said, it's kind of overwhelming, you know, because, like I said, the media and the police were trying to dumb it down and censor us as much as we can. We were out there with those 15, 20 people. You know, we were, those were the ones that are still out there this day, the A1 from day one, like we like to say, you know? That just refused to let them take that narrative over and to demonize the victims and the people that are involved with the movement, you know, and to generalize all of us with the same category as a select few, you know?
Yeah.
And, and that's going to show you that there's a lot of people that feel the same way. They just haven't been empowered to do that, you know? There's a line that was drawn for us a long time ago, you know? And when we crossed over the line in Ferguson and we, like, completely removed it, and now you see the system trying to put that line back into place. And we're just not letting it happen, you know what I'm saying? And now the nation has risen up, and it's, you know, it's turned into a movement, you know, and a revolution, honestly, you know, because the fact is that this is not going to stop until change is made.
Yep.
No matter what narrative the media and the police push. And there's not going to be no us going in the house until we actually see and feel change.
Right, absolutely. And when you started, I mean, you weren't even allowed to stand still at a certain point. They tried to dictate that you had to keep moving. I mean, just trying to exhaust you, basically.
Mm-hmm. We couldn't stop moving, and then they deemed that unconstitutional, and then they did a 5-second rule, which you could only stay posted on, you know, standing on the side, or, you know, for 5 seconds, and then they had legal grounds to arrest you, you know, and it was very alarming, you know, that, you know, the simplest of our constitutional rights can be null and voided by just the authority figure saying so, you know, and that's very alarming.
Yeah.
And then there's no one to set these authority figures in check, you know. The thing about democracies, we're supposed to have checks and balances.
Right.
And there's no such thing. There's no checks and balances here whatsoever.
Dude, you're the check.
That's the problem.
You're the check. You've been out there every day bringing this, the live stream footage, so that we know what's going on. Right? You said that you refuse to allow the narrative be dictated because of people like you, right? I'm serious. You're one of the few people out there. There's, you know, other live streamers, but have been really making sure that that narrative doesn't get maligned. I think that's a good segue. And I do want to talk about your over the indictment announcement weekend, your incarceration, the snatch and grab. I want to talk about that, but you mentioned sort of the narrative, and I think there's a good segue into this past weekend, the two police officers that were killed in New York, and there's this weird kind of paradoxical. So there's opponents to change, and they'll sit here and they'll decry, you know, not all cops, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, a few bad apples don't spoil the batch, not all cops, but then alone. Psychotic individual makes
the way I feel is that, you know, they generalized us, you know, but the thing
right.
is that we're not silent, you know, but the thing is that they are, you know. I don't like to generalize, but whenever you have the whole police force nationwide backing the murders of citizens, no accountability whatsoever, nobody's speaking out, nobody's saying nothing's wrong, everybody's going business as usual, I can't say that they're all good. No, I can't. I can't say that. No, I can't say that without being something in my stomach telling me that that's wrong. And I'm not going to never say nothing like that. That's not the way I roll. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I always say what's needed to be said.
I agree. But the paradox for me is that the opponents will castigate all protest action because of one individual's, you know, assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they won't. So they make the generalization with protest movement, but they don't make that generalization when it comes to police action.
Well, for me, the generalization is even doubly evil and wrong in terms of there is no link. It wasn't as if this was a protester who got all fired up because he was protesting every night. He was a guy that shot a woman first. And then got two cops. I mean, there's no relation at all. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, if you check on Twitter and search that, his three words about this, or Google it, I mean, he just said it perfectly, that they're trying to, again, steal the narrative to make a claim that there's some association there that just simply isn't there at all. And frankly, my take on it is I cannot believe. I think it's amazing. I'm just absolutely stunned, in fact, that you can have cops killing 1,000 black people, 21-to-1 rate blacks to white, and yet blacks or minorities like you are, Bassam, have been the behavior is exemplary. The behavior is unbelievably good considering the scenario. To me, I'm just absolutely shocked. I'm shocked that there has been one misguided individual in all of these 4 months. It wouldn't have surprised me if there were way, way, way more misguided individuals, because they're getting killed.
You know, a lot of people have been holding back. Yeah,
a
lot of people have been holding back. And then when you watch like the streams and you watch this, the way that they've been constantly treating us, constantly trying to suppress us, and that just, you know, us on the ground, we're furious. You know, but we're not out calling for blood. You know, we're not.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
How have you how have you managed to maintain your composure through all of this? When I watch the live streams, frankly, and maybe it's my white privilege talking here, I want to punch someone in the face. You know what I mean? How have you, like, just to be treated that way? I watched in Oakland, and you went to Oakland, and I watched, there was a 9-minute segment that someone recorded. I'm sure you've seen it, Bastion, because you're so in touch. there was a 9-minute segment where they kept walking in, and the guy who was shooting it kept saying, Harris, badge 115, Jones, badge 172, because they were like striking and pushing back and being very aggressively violent toward these protesters who were continually get backed up into corners and kettled. And yet they maintain this composure. I don't even know how have you and all of you that have done this been able to maintain such a mature composure.
Well, I mean, like the way, okay, like you, the generalizations, you know, I mean, when we're out there putting our life on the line, you know, we're also putting our life into other people's hands that's standing next to us, you know, standing behind us, you know? So, you have to look at those people, we have to look at those people and look at their best interests and put them at heart as well, you know? And the thing is that we don't want to put anybody in danger. We don't want to see none of our family killed. So, as you know, we're out here to protest, to raise awareness to the cops and to the people that this is going on. But at the same time, behind that police line, they've got all the weapons. Yep. They got everything to mess us up. So we have to do what we can to make sure that's less tense as possible.
Mm. No. And, I thank God, Bassem. I thank God that, or whoever you feel has some sort of power to the end result of all these things. But I'm just so thankful that you and Netia and DeRay and Charles Wade, who we had on the show, all of the leadership, Brown Blaze, Brittany, I mean, everybody. Yeah. I'm so thankful that the leadership that ended up coming out of Ferguson was so intelligent about what was suitable and what wasn't, or what would forward the movement and what wouldn't forward the movement. I'm so thankful for you guys. I can't tell you. It just overwhelms me when I think of what could have happened here if a very, you know, violent faction came out first, and the carnage that would be here, because, you know, we're making such small gains here right now, and there's so many days that are so sad, you know, and just the hate that we just see daily, it just makes me cry. But I just think of what we would have seen if you guys weren't so mature about all this, if you guys didn't have such an amazing background to understand what was going to be the right course of action. I'm really thankful for you guys, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, and that stems from us being, you know, constantly victimized by the system, you know, so we know how it feels to be disenfranchised, to have our voice not heard, and what we need to do to move forward, you know, because we've lived it. So, you know, there's no better experience than that, you know, and the passion that comes with it is, you know, the conviction has been, what I know is it's been bred into us because of where we live. You know, St. Louis is a different place than most places, you know. You come here, you know, it's like still 30 years behind, you know. It's very segregated. Yeah. It's very, it's racist, you know. And I thought that this is how it was everywhere, you know.
What have you learned? That are some places better than St. Louis?
Yes. As far as policing, I can't say as far as racism is concerned, but policing, yes. I traveled a little bit with my, you know, sales and marketing job that I had from before, you know. And I was able to move freely in other places that I was not able to move freely. And, like, I'm still not able to move freely here in St. Louis, you know.
How about Berkeley? Berkeley was, I assume that overall Berkeley, there seemed to be a higher level of tolerance, or?
Well, I didn't spend too much time in Berkeley, you know, but.
Oh, you were in Oakland only?
Yeah, I was in Oakland. You know, it's the Bay Area. It's all, you know, right, like, 20 minutes away from each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I saw, that the police are, you know, they know how to handle the protests, you know, like as far as like strategies and how to break them up and to keep people on the move. Right. As far as how they police their people, I don't really know because I haven't lived there, you know. Mm-hmm. But I know that, like, in places like, you know, I lived in Phoenix for 5 months, you know. I didn't have not one single contact with police while I was there. It doesn't make them bad. It just, because, you know, different places have different status quo. In Arizona, they have rules to where they can stop any Latino and check their documentation. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, over there, it's Latinos. Over here, it's blacks. Over,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
in
yeah.
In different parts of this country, you got different people being put down because of who, you know, where they came from, and you know, a lot of it's, you know, money concerns, you know, and that's what is fueling the police right now. You know, the 1% using the middle class to hold down the middle class. You know, it's complete brainwashed. You know, they're brainwashed.
That's Fox News right there. We always say, Drew and I, we always say that Fox.
I try not to even say news after Fox.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not news.
Yeah, but I just don't want people to think of the network.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we always say that it's the 1%, it's the super rich 1% telling the less rich 1% that's on the air to tell the middle class that the lower class is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked before.
We're just trying to live our life, you know. You can't blame citizens for being upset about how we're being treated by our own service.
No, not at all.
Even with the killings, you cannot blame that on anybody besides the inaction from the government and the people in charge of the police, you know?
Wow.
If
I'll take a step
we had justice, that person wouldn't have did what he did, maybe. I don't know. Like, he still probably would have been crazy. He probably still did what he did, but he wouldn't have done it in the name that he did it in. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
and we would have had a completely different narrative than we're having right now.
We're talking before you came on, Baz, and me and John Beats were, and this is maybe not for you. This is two white guys talking about this. But as a white person, and my wife's black, so we have these kind of dialogues. Prior to August 9th, we'd had sort of these discussions. She'd been in this social justice work, you know, legislative, you know, work, trying to get things done here in New Jersey. And I always sort of felt like, you know, it's not willful racist. There's people that are just uninformed. And I always thought, well, how big of that piece of pie are the people that are just uninformed and they're not really awoke to what's going on? And I overestimated. And the longer I'm in this movement and doing the work, the more, I don't want to say cynical I get, but the more I start to realize, you know, geez Louise, man, that group that's uninformed is pretty small. At least it seems it. Mm-hmm. And the group that's, once they become awake, they're aware, and then they're still indifferent. They're still supremacist. They're still on the surface racist. And it's like,
well, most
hell?
People, they already have their mind made up before they hear any kind of news story. You know, that's just the way people have been programmed, you know?
Bassam, I agree 100% with that. 100%. I'm very shocked. You're right on about that. Right on. It's very hard to change a mind.
We can't change those people how they feel. We can't change racism immediately. You know what I'm saying? It's going to take generations. But we can change something tangible, which is the system, you know? We can make it to where it doesn't do the things that it does. It doesn't perpetrate acts of violence and oppress people of a certain demographic for its own gain, you know, to exploit them for their own gain, you know, and that's what we can stop right now, you know?
Yeah, and that's actually...
We can, you know, the issue of racism has been, you know, it's not decades, it's centuries, you know, like McMahon said, the congressman said yesterday, you know, or I think Mayor de Blasio said that day, whatever. But that's true, you know, and is, you know, 50 years ago, people were drinking out of a separate water fountain. So we can't really say that this is over. This is just beginning. You know, and we've, you know, there's been steps taken, the civil rights movement and stuff like that, but it stopped at a certain point. And like I said, that line, you know, they're slowly, slowly trying to take more and more away from us with every tragedy that happens. You know, they use it to fearmonger the public and to basically giving the government anything that they want to do, you know?
I agree.
And that's a big problem, you know? And that's the reason why, you know, like, I didn't have social media before August 9th. You know, I was on Facebook. You know, I'd log on once every 2 weeks. I didn't have Twitter, nothing, you know? But me being Palestinian, you know, I know what the media can do, you know? But when I went out there August 9th, August 10th, I went back home and I saw... When I saw on the streets and I saw what I saw on the news, I was like, here we go again, you know what I'm saying? So then, you know, I immediately just made the Twitter. I was just like, you know, I have to help any which way I can, you know?
And it's been a tremendous help.
It manifested into something bigger, you know? And the live streaming, I had no idea about it at all. I just was going to the app store and I saw it. I was like, wow, this is going to make our protest pretty damn effective, you know? And just started, you know, going with the flow, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, I didn't know that it was, you know, already being used. None of that. I was oblivious. I'm not that good with tech stuff, you know what I'm saying?
You're not? I was under the impression you were like a genius with it.
And actually, let's pivot, Basm, because I want to talk about Giuliani and the comments he made and how this narrative is trying to make protesters look like we're responsible for violence, trying to put protesters in a bad light. It's, you know, middle America are now sort of, oh, yeah, I agree, you know, they're doing these bad things. But you mentioned live stream, and I actually wanted to talk to you. This is very interesting to me. So I love media. I'm intrigued by, you know, I use live stream at my day job, and I host events for tens of thousands of people. And I hadn't really thought of what you do in terms of live streaming content as somewhat different than the way I've been seeing and using live stream. So people can come to your stream, they can kind of watch, they can stick around. But when I watch you, you're part of it. So there's a difference between simply filming an event and then filming an event and giving sort of some commentary and some analysis. You know, you interject when people are, you know, you're trying to, you know, not just as a reporter, but you're trying to, that's a lie, you know, what are you doing, you bullshit. So you're not just streaming the information, but you're kind of participating and helping shape that for the viewer. And I don't know if that's something that you did on your own, if that's what other live stream content producers do. How did you kind of come into sort of your space where your voice is not just there, but actually part of what we're watching?
Well, I mean, it's just kind of something that developed, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm personally the type of guy who's like, I can't, you know, if nobody's going to say it, then I will say it. I will say what needs to be said, you know what I'm saying? And you know, when I feel like I have a duty to the people that are watching to let them know exactly what's going on, you know what I'm saying? So nothing gets sugar-coated, nothing gets misinterpreted, and that, you know, we stay on the status quo, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things can be, you know, shifted in any direction, and we want to stay on the path of what we're really out here for. So, you know, it's necessary to do that because people can take some situations and turn them completely opposite, you know what I'm saying? And, there's nothing we can do about that, you know what I'm saying? But what we can do is we can keep people informed, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, that's just the way I personally do it, you know? Other people have different styles, but, yeah, I mean, I really can't say, like, my reasoning in doing it, but it's just like, yeah, I'm a vocal person, and I like to make sure that, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know what I'm saying? And that the people that are watching know exactly what's going on, and they're not being manipulated any which way, you know?
I think one of the things that's happened that's very important is we had a very strong, of course, civil rights movement in the 1960s, and basically they ended up killing all the leaders, put a kibosh on most of that. And then it became rather dormant for a long period of time. And I think one of the reasons that it became dormant is that the media started to really become corporate and set the narrative all the time. And if you look at the mainstream media now, even, you look at the MSM, the narrative is exactly the same as it was through the 80s, 90s, and the first decade in this century. Nothing has changed. The thing that's changing is that the social media and the Internet gives us, as you have been, the power, which is only very recent. I mean, we have the ability to put video on Internet for maybe 10, 15 years, but to actually live stream and have that live streaming somewhat affordable and not completely ruin your pocket, your pocketbook, your wallet, and have the ability to do it. This is something entirely new, and it's changing the narrative towards the middle.
Absolutely.
That's the first time this has happened in forever, because nothing else has changed. The media is still the same. The country is still the same. There have been over 1,000 blacks killed or minorities killed by cops per year for decades. Since I put it together, and I've been looking very hard, and if anyone's out there and interested, go to killedbypolice.net. They, for the last 2 years, have been, as much as they can, listing every single one. And they haven't been able to, because in a lot of instances, the cop just puts the gun away, looks at the dead person, and moves on. But a lot of them are being detailed in some ways, as much as they can. The FBI, the DOJ, they haven't done anything yet. There's no national database. There's a national database for every breed of dog and how many of those there are, but there's no national database for cops killing human beings.
So they're afraid of the data.
Fucked up as that is.
They're afraid of the data.
That's got to change soon. But the only thing that's really changed at all is what you're doing, Basham. Put a light on the lie. The lie is perpetuated for decades. And now we've finally got a light on that lie.
Well, and the simple thing is that he and other live streamers and other, you know, people within the movement are using tools, technology, social media, live stream, to disseminate information quicker than
we weren't getting.
Not just weren't getting, they're disseminating it faster than the
filtered and
exactly.
And switched around.
They do it quicker. They do it quicker than
they can't do nothing about it.
Yep. The narrative can't twist it.
They can't control.
Exactly.
And you know what allows Twitter and this stuff to allow this to happen? They totally fuck themselves over. You know what I'm saying?
And you know what I've seen, Bassem? You know what I've seen recently? And I've only been doing this seriously. I've only been woke, as I like to say, for about 4 months. But you know what I've seen? And I have a nice background of this to understand a lot of this, which I can't go into. But I understand things like attribution. When attribution is when a story is written as if the narrative of that story is true. But the actual narrative of that story is just coming from being in a newsroom and phoning up a cop or a cop PR flack and saying, hey, what happened out there? And then writing up that story as truth. And the only proof of that story is the phone call made from the reporter sitting at his desk job to the cop who answers, or the cop PR flack who answers as if the words coming out of their mouth have no other side of the coin. And you are presenting for the first time that other side of the coin. And the change that I have seen in the last 4 months is that when this first started, when Michael Brown first started, you would never have the cop said. You would never have it attributed. You would never have, then the cop said this. And then this allegedly happened according to the cop. It was just spoken as this happened, that happened, this happened, that happened. Now they're waking up to the fact that there's an other side to this story because you're showing it. And it's a monumental change. And people are only starting to see how vital it is to real change. Change that's going to mean lives saved happening in the future.
And Basil,
it's one of the rare things, there aren't enough, that I feel is moving in the right direction, and that's thanks to guys like
you. It's given power to the masses, to the people. But Basim, you said that they fucked up, that they something about Twitter. I wanted to hear what your thought was. What was your thinking?
Well, I mean, because obviously we live in a state that doesn't allow things to happen, that doesn't want to happen. So whoever allowed this phenomenon to happen, you know what I'm saying? They fucked up because basically, you know, it's going to change the status quo. It's going to change the narrative of everything that's going on. The mainstream media is going to be obsolete within the next few years. You know, it's just fact. You know what I'm saying? People would rather, you know, find out their own way objectively nowadays. You know what I'm saying? There's more curiosity than there was in the past because we have, we've had years and years of lies spewed at us, and when people are, you know, like me personally, you know, or other people that I saw next to me like that, saw that were like believed all this stuff, right? And I saw in their faces how betrayed they were. You know what I'm saying? And that betrayal is running deep now. They're like, everything that they've been taught was a lie, sham, you know? And, you know, it's taken for a lot of people a lot of time to soak that in. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and this is because they're getting this objective, you know, like, the way I really put it when I first went out there, you know, the live stream is here to protect us. Anyone who's watching is just observing, you know. So while they're observing, they're also getting aware, you know, of what's going on. And for those people that are in power, you know, this is very scary for them, you know.
Sure.
And with this, they don't know how to handle it. You know, they fucked up.
They don't know how to handle this.
You know what I'm saying?
That's why they're pushing for net neutrality, right? That's why they don't want a neutral net, because they want to be able to control everything and all the narratives. And I think there's two pieces. Maybe this is what you're hinting at. The combination of live streams, social media, the immediacy and the ability to disseminate the narrative without someone else fucking twisting it. That's part A. Part B, you wouldn't have the necessity of part A if the cops and the law enforcement, everyone, hadn't fucked this up so egregiously, right? If they had kind of been, it's almost like we know that they've been killing black people and they've been doing all this horse shit. They dialed it up to 11 because why not? They've been getting away with it for years. So let's dial it up to 11. And then we shine a light on it and they're like, oh, let's dial it up even more, you know? So it's this sort of like abject, in the face of everything that's going on, their refusal to kowtow, to change it all, to double down on their supremacy and racism, it's waking people up, like me and drumbeats.
For the first time, you see them like having to falter and like you catching them in their lies, you know?
Yeah.
People, person before had just their word, and that was it, you know. But now it's like, dude, we saw what happened. How can you say that? And it's discrediting those people that have been in power. Chief Dodson was at the Ferguson Commission and said, oh, well, we didn't tear gas any peaceful protesters. And then there's video that proves that they did. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how are you going to blatantly lie?
I'm laughing at you and your...
Half or almost all of the people stood up and turned their back to him. You know what I'm saying? Because, dude, I mean, we saw what's going on. We were out here. People across the nation know what's going on. You just made yourself a claim.
Yeah,
idiot by denying. You know what I'm saying? And they're on their heels, you know what I'm saying, constantly. They don't know how to deal with this. That's why they're trying to demonize anybody that's doing this. You know what I'm saying? They go in the name, you know, terrorist and this and that. You know what I'm saying? Simply because I'm standing my mind. You know what I'm saying? I am American. I have a right to do this. Anybody, even if you're not American, you're a human being, you have the right to live a peaceful life, you know what I'm saying? You know, we got this whole notion that, oh, America can do no wrong. People in other countries have more freedom than us, and that's real. We are supposed to be the freest country, but yet we have the most laws, we have the most people incarcerated, we have the most police murders. It's ridiculous, you know? So, yeah, people are waking up to the fact that this is not the state that they had been raised to believe that it is.
Yeah, and I want to make sure, drumbeats, before you go in, I want to make sure we keep it moving. We did want to talk a little bit generally about being hard on systems but soft on people. And maybe, you know, I have a little bit different view, but I feel like the system, I'm hard on the system, but people that are in the system, and that admittedly includes cops. I'm not going to be hard on cops. They're individual people. Maybe they made mistakes. They should be held accountable. But I'm real hard on the system. And this sort of, there's a weird, again, this narrative where individual protesters and this sort of action and movement, they're being hard on us individually, right? Rather than, you know, listening to us decry the system. And I hope this is okay with you. I wanted to, and I'm not trying to gotcha with it, but so this whole narrative that, you know, the cops are saying, talk with us, not at us, which I think is a bullshit. It's a PR agency that's gotten a hold of the police and they're in crisis mode. And their method of saying, okay, people are protesting, they're on Twitter, they're, you know, attacking us, we should come back at them and make them look bad by saying, you know, you're not talking with us, come talk with us. When it's like, we haven't been invited to the table ever. This is the first time in the history that you're actually hearing us, and the language you're hearing is protest. So, you know, fuck off with this, talk with us bullshit. But so one of the things that I saw, so when we tweeted about you being on the show, I mentioned that the trolls just came out of the fucking woodwork. Your name is like, like, it's just, it's very...
I'm like, careful about...
It is unbelievable, man. I go about my peaceful day. I got two or three trolls per day. It's like, hey, Bassam Masri's going to be on the show. Boom!
Yeah, I think
explosion of trolls.
I think I blocked like 15.
Your name, dude. Yeah.
Well, so here's what I want to ask. And again, I'm not trying to gotcha. So, and this is, you know, if you need, I can edit this out. But I saw one of the trolls was talking to me, and I saw an exchange they were banging at you about the... So again, back to your live stream, as a sort of content producer, you're engaging with... And I was laughing when you mentioned Chief Dodson, because I've seen quite a few of your streams. You could have like a highlight reel of you and Dodson talking, but or as Dodson attempting to talk and you dispelling his bullshit. But so anyway, there was a comment about you being on tape and making statements about, you know, fuck the police, or, you know, pigs, this and that. And me personally, I interpret that as, here's an individual, he's doing what he needs to do and wants to do, and he's mad at the system. He's not mad at any, he's not fuck you, officer, blah, blah. It's, you know, hey, this is the system. But what people do, in particular trolls and your detractors, they'll take that and they'll say, okay, you know, here's Bassam saying, fuck the police. He's against cops. He, you know, he's a bad person. He's saying this thing, fuck the police. You know, this whole, again, that's that narrative that they're trying to build. So I wanted to...
And they went as far as to linking me to the police murders in New York, and saying that the blood is on my hands.
And
that's how far they're going.
I was going to that. So what is, when you hear that, right? And again, I'm with you. You're on our show. I support you entirely. When I hear you make those statements, I don't think Bassam hates this individual cop. I think, like me, he's really outraged with the system. But how do you, you know, that narrative is there. How can we, what could you tell people that are listening, white people that are listening, when someone in their circle says, hey, you know what, I heard you retweeted Bassam, he said fuck the police, he's a terrorist. What would be a good way for them to kind of understand and be able to come back to that?
Well, I mean, the way that, I mean, they've never had to walk in our shoes, you know what I'm saying? And the fact that, you know, Bassam is saying fuck the police, they should be really saying, why is he saying that? You know, saying we should, and why are so many people agreeing with that? We should look at the root cause of this problem besides, you know, trying to magnify or amplify what one person has said, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, no, I'm not against any human being in this world. I'm against the system 100%, though, you know what I'm saying? And the police are part of the system. You know, they're the keepers of the system.
They're the bullies, yeah.
So, yeah, they're the front line of it. They're the ones that keep it safe. They're the ones that enforce it and all that stuff. So, you know, yeah, man, I mean, what I can say is that, you know, I'm never going to be out here calling for or perpetrating any acts of violence against any person. You know, I've never done it in my life, you know. I never will, you know, because that's the type of person I am, you know. All I can say is that we got people dying. We got people that are imprisoned every day falsely, you know what I'm saying? And you can't judge a person or a movement off the emotions that they have, you know what I'm saying? We, in St. Louis, and even in just in the United States, you know what I'm saying, we have a way of talking, the new generation, you know, and we're not censored. We're not going to be filtered, none of that stuff, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, whenever we have that culture and we have emotions, you can't filter yourself, you know what I'm saying, whenever stuff like this is happening, you know. We get, people are dead, you know. This is not a game, you know what I'm saying, where a word game or anything like that, you know what I'm saying? If it's meant, you know, protesting and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying, it's meant to make people uncomfortable, you know. So if they are uncomfortable, then this is what, I've done my job right, you know what I'm saying? Instead of asking Bassam what he needs to do, why he needs to say stop fucking the police, you need to ask the police why is Bassam saying fuck the police?
I think that's a good way of putting it. And I would say to someone, you know, ask yourself, why are you more upset with an individual exercising their rights to say fuck the police than you are with the police actually killing citizens of color? Why is that upset you more, right? Like, you're that upset about an individual saying their right, expressing their feelings, than you are about the system killing people? That's where I would say look at it. And what you said about the sort of the language and the way people are talking, I'm a little bit older. I'm in my 40s. I think it's great that the younger folks are not equivocating. And I would say that Drumbeat's one of the things that I resonate with you, and why you and I get along so well and or identified with each other on Twitter, is for the same reason. We're not pandering. We're not bullshitting it. We're not equivocating. It's sort of like, I'm going to say this. This is the truth, and you're going to hear it. And I think that's as part of this movement, it's something I haven't seen before from the, like you said, the leaders and the youth, that it's just like, no, you're going to hear us.
It's take it or leave it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm not trying to convince somebody who can't be convinced. You know what I'm saying? Blood on the street ain't going to convince you, and the people that are out here mobilizing does not convince you, and the videos don't convince you, then me saying, trying to justify what is not going to convince you. You know what I'm saying? So there's no point in it. You know what I'm saying? Those people, you know, we don't need the majority, or we don't need the minority, of people to agree with us. You know what I'm saying? This is democracy. The majority rules, you know? And I know for a fact, the majority of the people don't want to see innocent civilians, unarmed civilians getting gunned down. If they do, then they are on the other side of that line, and they're just trying to reinforce the system. You know, these trolls we see online, they're multiple with, you know, people with like one person with 10 accounts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I know for a fact that more people agree with me than not. You know what I'm saying? And the ones that don't agree are the ones that are standing behind that line, or the ones that are trying to keep themselves relevant in the media, because the mainstream media is obviously, you know, becoming obsolete. So it's going to do whatever it can to keep itself relevant, you know, to keep that machine going, you know. So they're going to do whatever they can to do that, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, they're going to criticize, and they're going to, you know, I have to read my tweets now 3-4 times before I tweet them out, you know what I'm saying? I have to be very careful about what I say.
Mm.
And I'm not used to that, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to a certain point, censor myself or anybody else in the name of respectability politics. It's not going to happen, you know what I'm saying? This is a new generation. We're going to be the ones that are going to be leading this country in the future. So we're going to just have to go ahead and let the culture go on ahead and, get into the government, you know what I'm saying? Because if your government doesn't look like who it's representing, then there's a big problem. You know,
yeah.
We got a lot of urban, you know, areas, and you know, and people that are, you know, identifying with hip hop culture, and a lot of people that are, you know, not, you know, respectable. You know, all that respectable politics bullshit. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to conform to that. So does that mean that essentially that they're not supposed to have a voice in government?
Mm.
Not supposed to have a voice in how their communities are being ran? You know, no, of course not. But they're still supposed to. You know, that's how democracy works. So, you know, if they don't like it, then
remind yourself, Basim, I'm not going to apologize
about nothing.
No, the only thing that's ever changed the world, literally, the only thing that's ever made changes is a small committed group of individuals pulling for that change, and the rest of us fall in line. And that's what's going on right now. And you're absolutely right.
And we're not allowing that to happen. You know, there's not one leader of this movement. There's multiple. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, there's no head to cut off. Everybody has an equal say. Nobody is more important than nobody else. You know what I'm saying?
Well said.
And that's why, that's where this has evolved from different, from at least the past, from what I've seen, from what we've been taught, you know, is that, you know, there was, you know, even though it's not the case, you know, there was multiple civil rights leaders. It wasn't just Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, but they were the ones that were amplified. They were the ones that were put on a pedestal, you know, but the only reason that that was able to get as far as it was because of all the leadership that was on the street that was constantly mobilizing, you know? And we got to be aware of that. We have to reproduce what they did, because what they did was amazing, and then add on to it some, you know, to make sure that, you know, that there is no, if they gun us down, that it's just going to be dormant anymore, you know what I'm saying? It's not going to happen this time, you know? It can't. You can't kill this idea. It's been implanted into too many heads now, you know? And they know this, you know, like, if one of us were to get hurt, protesters, a lot of people will get angry, you know what I'm saying? And that's why it hasn't happened yet, because, you know, there'll be a big backlash. I believe more than death police.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Because
that's a good...
of the fact that we have put ourselves in this position. We're not getting paid for it. You know what I'm saying? This is all coming out of passion, out of love for our people.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's a good...
love for human beings, you know what I'm saying?
That's a good pivot point there.
That needs to be put on top besides, you know, anything else that comes from it, you
yeah,
know?
And you made two really great comments. I'm going to, one, say you are not paid. There's people out there who think these are paid protesters. They're being supported. So you do have a fund. It's BasimMasryFTP@gmail.com. So that's BasimMasryFTP@gmail. And they can send money for PayPal to keep your live stream going, keep you going, doing this work that we need you to be doing. But you mentioned this.
And you know, that money that they send, you know, I don't keep it for myself, all of it. I try, and you know, I give everybody a little bit that I can to make sure that everybody's sustained. You know, anybody that usually comes to me for whatever they need, they know they get it. You know what I'm saying? And I know I can say that for a fact, because everybody knows that for a fact. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know, because, you know, like, the people that are on there with me every day, they're my family. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not going to let my family go hungry or none of that stuff. So anything that anybody does send, I do try and give what I can to everybody else. You know what I'm saying? And the fact is that we got a lot of people out here that have committed their lives to this, and that are not going to move forward until things are being done so that change is actually made. So we're going to have to, in order to sustain the movement, we're going to have to sustain those individuals, you know. So anything anybody can send will help, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're barely scraping by, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally. There's a lot of, you know, police get a lot of money to, you know, to do what they do, but with the little that we have, we've been able to make it work, you know? And if we're just given, you know, just a little bit, not money, but like more
support.
I don't know, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it can gain more traction, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, more resources, you know, to be able to spread this across the nation.
Well,
you know, because there's a lot of communities out there that, you know, are like Ferguson that don't have that don't have, that can't be empowered to do what we're doing here, you know what I'm saying? And we want to.
And to your point about the multiple to this multiple leader movement, right? So and I agree with you that there isn't one figurehead, and that makes it more powerful. It makes it more ground, you know, swell, makes it more grassroots. But to that end, I want to talk about your arrest in advance of the non-indictment of Darren Wilson. As best I can tell, and I'd like to hear from sort of you, it seemed like a snatch and grab. It seemed like here's someone who's got a live stream account. They're out there. We know this individual. They're streaming, you know, information that doesn't allow us to manipulate the narrative. Let's silence this person ahead of this, you know, what's likely going to be a busy weekend or Monday night, I guess, from the non-indictment. And then I read that the bond was outrageous, about $15,000. I think I read that you were literally arrested while a passenger in a vehicle, despite the arrest being based on driving. Are these things accurate? So maybe in your words, tell us a little bit about that weekend and what happened and how it all went down.
Well, okay, so it was about a week and a half before the indictment came down. I had got arrested. You know, I had got kind of snatched and grabbed off the street, you know what I'm saying? And while I was protesting, you know, there's a video of it. That day I was being surveillanced, you know? Hmm. And for days before that, they told me this, you know, while I was being questioned, you know, for driving. You know, so they told me that I had got into my car and moved it. You know what I'm saying? And they charged me with a felony for that. Like, I literally, like they say, I supposedly got into the car and moved it into a different parking area. You know what I'm saying? And then left it there. So they charged me with a felony for that. You know what I'm saying? But they charged me with it like 2 weeks later. You know, after
they didn't arrest you when you moved the
totally
car.
I didn't even do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they literally had me confused with my brother. Me and my brother were exactly alike. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, you know, it's pretty fucking nuts that they're gonna do that, and then they're not. You know, we haven't got to the discovery part of the case yet, so I can't. I don't know what evidence they have or suppose. You know what I'm saying? But
oh, so they're still prosecuting you. They're still prosecuting. They're moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they put that outrageous bond on me. This is what they did. They put me, they locked me up. You know, we had just left, me, T-Dub, and Rico. We had just left TGI Fridays. We just had lunch the day after the indictment. The night of the indictment, you know, the no indictment, you know, I had like 95,000 live viewers, you know what I'm saying, on my live stream. Mm-hmm. Most I ever had. It was amazing, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's kind of spurred them to take action, you know, because, you know, now there's really traction that's being gained by the stream. You know, a lot of people are watching, you know. So I think that's the main reason why they came and got me this very next day. And the way they got us was, it was just crazy because, you know, we were coming off Highway 70 in Union, you know, right there off the exit, like 8 to 10 detective cars just jumped out on us, man. And there was like 10 of them with guns, you know, in our faces, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, telling us that if we move, we're going to die, and this and that, and, you know, thank God nobody was hurt. We complied. We got to the station. T-Dub was immediately released because, you know, he had, like, a traffic warrant or two, you know what I'm saying, and those municipalities wouldn't come get him because, you know, the whole stuff going on, they're too busy. But they held me, you know, and then they didn't charge me with anything at first because they can hold you for 24 hours. So they charge you, you know. So they waited the whole 24 hours to charge me, and then the next day was Thanksgiving, and then it was on vacation, and you got to wait till Monday to go to court to possibly get a bond reduction, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, St. Louis City has done a lot of people dirty by keeping them in the, you know, in there for like a few months before they even lower that bond, you know?
Yeah, debtor's prison.
And, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, honestly, like, I was just like, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm used to it. I've been jailed a lot of times. I'm like, you know, I'm jailing. I'm here, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know what was going on the outside. I didn't know how fast they raised the $15,000, you know what I'm saying? It was ridiculous how fast they got that money, you know, from everybody, you know, donating $5-$10 at a time, which I thank everybody for doing that. Thank you so much. And they came and got me, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's why it's kind of like, you know, I think they've kind of backed off just a tad bit because the fact that they know that I'm just going to get right out, I'm going to be back on the street. Every time they do this, they amplify my voice more.
I was just going to say, they made you bigger.
So they're not going to keep doing stuff that's going to keep messing around, because obviously it's going to get amplified, you know. And, I mean, there's no, I mean, this is just the daily life that we go through over here, you know. This is a different, you know, like if y'all look at statistics, just in Ferguson, a town of 15,000 people, they issued 33,000 warrants, you know what I'm saying, in 1 year. That's double the population. It's not including women, elderly, and children. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know what I'm saying? They've criminalized everybody in the community. They've disenfranchised everybody in the community. We don't have a voice in government. So then the 74% population of blacks in Ferguson are represented by all whites. You know what I'm saying? Because none of them can vote. Everybody's been criminalized. Everybody's got warrants. Anytime somebody gets stopped, you know, oh, well, what's the probable cause? Well, he has warrants. And they don't have to, you know, they can just say that because they know everybody has warrants. Everybody has warrants. Nobody has a license. I don't know anybody that has a valid driver's license. Even business people, you know what I'm saying, that are respectable, don't have driver's licenses. They're limiting, you know, the way I know that, like, driving is a privilege. I think it should be a right, you know what I'm saying, because this is hindering people's way of transportation. You know, and this has really, really been a hinder on me my whole life. You know, I lost my license when I was 19 for an accident, a car accident, and I lost it for 15 years. Or I have to pay a judgment, like $20,000, you know what I'm saying? How am I supposed to do that, you know what I'm saying? It's like, they give us no second chances whatsoever. You know, once you have made a mistake, that mistake's going to live with you for the rest of your life. But that doesn't work vice versa, though.
And I'll give you the prime example. Me, right? Very white guy. Mm-hmm. I got arrested at 13 for armed robbery, class X felony. I popped a kid's kickball with a knife, and I asked for money for like cigarettes or something. And I won't say that I was right or wrong or that it was trumped up, whatever. But I had to go to Cook County, had to go into court, had a prosecutor, had a psychologist, and they're literally, this is like verbatim, we don't want to ruin this young boy's future, so we're going to expunge that. You can't even find it on the books. I got arrested for a class X felony, armed robbery. You can't even find it on the fucking books because they didn't want to damage this good little white boy. You know?
Oh man,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm labeled criminal for traffic tickets.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just so crazy.
They tell you you got to obey the law, comply with the law, and this is the narrative that I keep hearing from a lot of the trolls, you know, which I know are just cops. You know what I'm saying? That's the brainwashing that they've been implemented in their head, you know what I'm saying, to where, you know, they can't do nothing wrong at all. And it all stems from the TV, you know what I'm saying? Most people that haven't had contact with the police or the system have just a TV to go off of, you know what I'm saying? And what do you see on TV? You see nothing but shows that glorify them, you know what I'm saying? Propaganda mixed with entertainment at the same time, you know what I'm saying? Keep people warped into that Law and Order, CSI, cops, this, this, and that, constantly making it to where it seems like they're just superheroes. They solve every crime when they don't solve anything. They don't really solve a thing. If you actually look at it, look at all the murders that happen here where we're come from in St. Louis, you don't see nobody, no kind of investigations, nothing. They just come take the report, and if that person isn't there on the scene, they leave. And they do a little bit of investigation afterwards, but that's it. You know what I'm saying? Unless there's concrete stuff, there ain't no investigating going on. But they put more of the resources into extorting citizens, money, traffic. They made a business out of that instead of doing what they're supposed to do. We have a heroin epidemic in this country. We have a gun problem in this country. We have a murder problem in this country. Yet they're so worried about warrants and traffic tickets and this and that. And, you know, and it's really getting frustrating. You know what I'm saying? We would like a police force that does its job, doesn't put us in the middle of it. The ones that are just trying to live their life, you know what I'm saying? Not trying to have to where they're leaving bodies out on the street for 4.5 hours to intimidate a community into obedience. You know, that's the way I saw it. It's disrespectful, and it was a show of, this is what happens to you.
Yeah, it was to terrorize.
With the police.
It was to terrorize, absolutely.
I think that one of the biggest problems is this complete carte blanche to do anything. You can, as an officer, pretty much do anything. And I've been doing a lot of research on that in the last 2-3 days, and I've come up with some pretty startling stuff. I mean, the one we talk about all the time is that there are over 1,000 colored people killed per year. A great percentage of those are people that are actually unarmed.
There's genocide.
This is genocide. That's one. Another one is that continues into the copra is wonderful myth, is that if you look at domestic violence, rape, assault, intimidation of women in either a married or girlfriend point of view, you have cops at a ratio of being charged for this at a 4 times higher rate than the general population. This is 4 times higher for people, cops that are actually put on the books for it. Imagine the women's rights movement that put these numbers together to figure it out were the worst offenders and found cops were 4 times more offenders. They also were able to note that the number they believe is maybe 2 or 3 times higher than that.
The
cops are twice or three times more guilty because what will happen is they intimidate the woman that wants to charge and says, no, don't do that. Well, that's a good idea to just let that slide. We'll continue to watch this. We got your back, but don't take this officer and charge him. Then they also will just say they did charge it, but they don't even put it on the books. They just say, okay, you know, leave her alone. You don't want your whole cop career to be ruined by this. So it's 4 times worse than the general population on the books. They think it might be 10 to 12 times worse than the general population. So again, this myth of cop as superhero is ridiculous. These are two very serious crimes. Murder, one, of course, of black people, colored people, at 1,000 per year. Secondly, you've got raping at 4 times higher than the general population as well. And then the final myth that gets perpetrated all the time is the cop is dangerous. Cop is not dangerous. You look at deaths per year. 2013, there were 27 cop deaths. Loggers, there were 270. There's a list that you can find very easily of which employment causes the most death. Logging, fishing, is 10 times higher than cop. Cop is right beside taxi cab driver, if you can believe it. So the third myth that's perpetrated here, that cops are superheroes when they're not even close to that. In fact, they're anti-superheroes. They're, you know, just this whole narrative is just ridiculous. But people don't want to read it because the police unions are just so very strong that they're continuing to, and they're supported by the mainstream media, that they're able to sell this narrative. That's just completely ridiculous.
And the police unions are a huge part of this problem. I mean, they're the ones that are keeping the noose tightened on all the elected officials, you know what I'm saying? And that's something that we're going to have to address and have to dismantle immediately. Police unions, they're 100% the problem. You got Jeff Rorta came out demanding the Rams players apologize, this and that. And then you had the cop union guy in New York declaring war on citizens.
Yeah, Pat Lynch.
You know what I'm saying?
That was a threat.
What the fuck, man? Like,
and the Cleveland one, too. The Cleveland one former asked for an apology, too, from the football player Haskins that spoke out so eloquently. He said, why should I apologize for asking for justice? Don't we all want justice? I mean, he was very, very good on the topic, and I commend him to speak so intelligently.
Yeah, me too, man. Like, you know, whenever they come out, you know, like you know, when I saw like the Rams players come out with their hands up, and I see it really inspires me, man. It inspires a lot of us. You know what I'm saying, and you know, when we know that our work is actually being heard, and all of you know, it really, I don't know. I'm speechless. You know what I'm saying? None of us asked for this. You know what I'm saying? And none of us knew what the position that we were going to be in. You know what I'm saying? I just feel like, you know, all the stuff that I have been through. The arrests, it's just, you know, built up to this point, you know, to make sure that, you know, that I have it, that I have the conviction to stay, to keep my eye on the prize, and that I'm not going to shift from the narrative because I know what these people can do.
Good
you know what justice looks like, and you're not quitting until you get it, and I have great admiration for that. You know what, one thing that I do wish that would happen, and we've seen it so far in terms of what Haskins came out and did in Cleveland, and with LeBron James also did in Cleveland, and that was awesome too, fantastic. The St. Louis Rams football players, 5-6 of them all came out as well, and Derrick Rose in Chicago, same thing. And the one thing that all of these people have in common though is they're black.
Mm-hmm.
We got it.
We had some.
Got to have that first moment that a white person finally
There was a few of them. I saw like
Jeremy Lin,
a college women's from. I don't, but I see a few of them with the shirts on. I can't say specifically who they were. You know.
I'm looking for like the Tom Brady, the New England Patriots, or something. I'm just looking for a big white name to just get off that damn fence, mm-hmm. who actually feels the way that you and I feel and Drew feels, and supports it, not, you know, and stops thinking that it may hurt their pocketbook because it might not be the popular thing to say in the moment, because history has a way of recording a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That the one who doesn't say something, or the one who says something in the unpopular moment and is the first or second or third or fourth to do that, is often the hero 3 days later, because 3 years later, because everybody can see finally what justice looks like. Because it's really obvious to me what justice looks like. It's 100%er to me.
Yeah.
I don't see how anybody can be on the other side. I think anybody who's on the other side is a complete fucking idiot, to be honest.
You know what you just said, though, Drumbeats? And mm-hmm. I've had this discussion with my wife, Leslie. The Nation of Islam and Malcolm X, everything I think I know about him and the work that he did is written by the dominant narrative. So do I really know? I'm starting to question, you know, people. So the narrative is, you know, he was violent, he was this, he was that.
He was just speaking the truth. Malcolm X was the devil.
He was just speaking the truth.
He was an angel. And that's what everybody told me. I'm like 11 years old, and that's all anybody's saying. Oh, well, you know, be afraid of that guy. But the other guy over here, he's fine. This one's a Christian over here, he's fine. This guy over here is a Muslim, and this guy's violent. And I've been reading a lot of Malcolm X. Drew, that guy's not violent at all. He's amazing. Malcolm, do you read the stuff of Malcolm X?
He was just ahead of the curve.
He was a great orator, man, and he had power and words that nobody else could.
Oh my God! I listened to his last speech before they killed him. It's on YouTube. Yeah. His last speech before they killed him, Bassam. If you have 90 minutes, it's unbelievable. All you have to do is Google YouTube Malcolm X, his final speech. It's about 90 minutes, and my God, there's a part in there, Bassam, at about the 35-minute mark. If you go straight to, I think it's about the 35-minute mark. It might be around 35 to 45. I can't remember exactly. That's what happens when you get older. But I swear to God, Bassam, he's talking about Ferguson. I swear to God, he's talking about Ferguson, and he wasn't. He was talking about another place in Alabama. But at that moment, I thought, man, he's talking to you, Bassam. He's looking right at you, and he's talking to you in 1964.
Yeah, it was great foresight. That man was a great man, you know what I'm saying? And if he was alive this day, Martin Luther King was alive this day, I don't think we'd have these problems. I really don't. You know what I'm saying? Because they were the voice of reason in this country, mm-hmm. you know? And when they was and when they was gone, when the civil rights movement, went away,
yeah.
That's when you saw the really brutal side of the state.
Yeah, but you know what, Bassam? You said a really smart thing just about 20 minutes ago when you said, you know what, though? You can't cut the head off this movement. And I think that's pretty powerful because that movement had heads you could cut off. And those heads were cut off, mm-hmm. and it really hurt the movement. And I think one of the powers of this movement is you can't cut the head off.
Agreed.
This movement has thousands upon thousands of heads, and no one man is going to...
It's greater than all of it. No way.
Exactly.
No
and way. I think that was a brutal way, a brilliant way to put that, Bassam. And I think that's very important to this movement. And I know DeRay always says that, too. I read him and you and Charles Wade and a lot of you religiously every day. I try to figure out what's going on in your head so I can learn more. And I think that's just brilliantly put. It's like the one thing I'm going to take from this.
And it's so hard to fight.
We have to learn from our mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
When we can't continue to do the same thing and expect different results. So early on, you know, we were at, the PBS special, you know, and the lady was like, well, you know, we can't do this like we did in the past. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We got to be able to move forward and do stuff in a way that we've never done it before to get the results that we haven't gotten yet, you know? And that's something that really resonated with me. And that's the reason why I've tried to amplify as many voices as possible, you know, to make sure that, you know, if something like this tragedy were to manifest, you know, that there wouldn't be no repercussions on it to the movement, you know, that it's going to follow through and sacrifice won't be made in vain.
And there's additional benefit. It's not just that it's harder to fight, right? A disparate yet coordinated movement, because that's what it is. We're bunch of individuals in a disparate geographic location, but coordinated in their demands and efforts. So not only is that harder to fight, but it gives the rest of the country an ability to see this. So if it were a figurehead, if it was just one person, and they've tried, the narrative machine has tried to point Al Sharpton out, you know, Al Sharpton's a race baiter, he's a, you know, race arsonist, or whatever these fucking words are coming up with. But you almost, it's like, give me a break. Like, most people see through that. No, that's not true at all, because there's a disparate, coordinated group of individuals that are doing this across the country. When we saw after the non-indictment, I think it was 100-plus cities had protests. We haven't seen anything like that in 50 years. And that message can't be maligned. You can't look at 50, you know, I think it was tens of thousands of people in 100 and some odd different locations in 5 different countries coordinated and having this action. That's a message you can't.
I mean, that's the truth. You know, I mean, the stream is what the people around it make it. You know what I'm saying? I can't take credit for any of this stuff because, you know, we all made it happen together. You know, you, me, Tef Poe, you know, everybody that's been involved from day one, who's seen what's going on, who's tried what they can, you know, everybody's done their part, you know what I'm saying? And this is the reality of it, you know? And we can't marginalize people's work, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that are working behind the scenes that are doing amazing things, that are organizing in ways that, you know, are, one, keeping up, you know, with the technology, with the culture, you know, just keeping everything, you know, very, very organized, you know what I'm saying? I mean, one person can't do that, you know? One person can't amplify the movement. You know, the movement amplifies that person.
And I feel like there's going to be, you know, for this movement, and I hope that it, you know, is in the history books in many years and people talk about it. I don't think there's going to be a Rosa Parks, but there are going to be dozens and dozens of Claudette Colvins, right? So we don't know the name Claudette Colvin because she was the first person to, you know, refuse to take a back seat on the bus. But, you know, she was there first, but history's kind of forgotten her because she wasn't the perfect person. You know, Rosa was a better person to get behind. This isn't happening like that. We're not waiting for perfection. We're moving forward. I shouldn't say the movement is moving forward. Regardless of whether this is the, you know, and again with Mike Brown and you know, all these other victims of extrajudicial killings, you know, it's not, we don't need a perfect victim to know that we're living in hell.
Can't put any brakes on this movement is the urgency of it, the immediacy of it, because just you'd think, and this was my feeling, it's like, okay, there's been months of protesting, there are hundreds of thousands of people in tens of cities, hundreds of cities across the United States that are making a point here to stop doing this, stop killing colored people, and yet it's not slowing down at all.
It's and so amplified,
maybe, it's even, being amplified almost. It's almost like they're digging in and killing more. And
they're in defense mode.
And that's some crazy shit if you think about it. Let's kill some more to prove that we have the right to kill. What? You know, it's just, you're just shocked, but that's what we're in front of. And one of the reasons that the movement is just so powerful and just so consistent is that the cops are not relenting at all. They're not stepping back an inch. They're digging in harder.
That's so, creating more people.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, man. That's exactly what's happening here.
So we're at about the hour point, and I've just got told by my better half that I've got to get her to her hair appointment.
So we should
slow it down. But I wanted to you reference, Basim, that the, you know, sort of the police unions and the power, and we didn't play it, and then maybe I'm glad because I, you know, fucked Giuliani. But so the narrative coming out of New York after the two officers were killed is just disgusting. They're pinning this on the protest, they're pinning this on the movement, and unfortunately it worked. Blasio came out and asked for deference. He said, please don't, you know, leaders, please consider not protesting until these officers are buried. I'm not saying that no one's going to heed it.
Come out and ask for cops to stop oppressing people then.
I agree.
We should start looking into the actual root of the problem besides blaming the people who are trying to raise awareness of the problem.
I'm with you 100 on that.
Bassem, I always say it this way. Everybody concentrates because of that racism on the effect and not the cause. And that's exactly what he did there. He concentrated on the effect, so you better stop protesting. Well, the cause is, and the cause and effect relationship is the first thing that happened. So don't worry about the second thing. Worry about the first thing, and the first thing is obvious.
Even that's bullshit, though.
A guy gets killed in a stairwell. That's the obvious here.
We have the constitutional rights to demonstrate. They don't have the constitutional rights.
But they don't have the constitutional right to kill Eric Garner or Kai Gurley as easily and nonchalantly as they do.
Amir Rice.
Yeah, but listen to the...
Run down like 10 seconds after they showed up.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, that is just...
Even this whole...
And that all this.
Yeah, 1.8 seconds.
But look at the when we're talking about, you know, what you just said, Drumbeat, you're right, and I agree, and same with you, Bazin, but the whole thing's bullshit. No one got on the news talking about Eric Fain, who killed, he targeted cops here in Pennsylvania, wrote a letter, I'm going to fucking kill cops. He went into a department, killed a cop, was on the run for like a month plus. They were shutting down parts of the Poconos. Nobody fucking got on the news and said, oh, we got to, you know, start talking about, you know, cops being killed and whatever. Jody Foster.
Gun laws.
Right? Remember when Ronald Reagan?
Laws.
No, but when Ronald Reagan
after
got...
Sandy Hook, they didn't even, you know, they tried to bring it up and then people quickly, you know, buried it, you know what
the
saying?
NRA buried
as
that.
As
and you got the,
could,
you got the people in Vegas too, the two whites in Vegas, and then you've got I lost it.
I said Ronald Reagan when that I forget who it was that shot Reagan and Bradley or Brady rather.
Ivan Bundy. That's what I was trying to think of.
The guy that killed the guy that shot at Ronald Reagan, the assassination attempt. He claimed he was doing this to win the favor of Jodie Foster. Did anybody come out and blame Jodie Foster for Ronald Reagan's assassination attempt? No. Right? Not a fucking person. So why are we, because one person killed two cops and wrote a note, why are we now making that broad leap?
But so, double standards, for me, anybody does a double standard, that's my, like, pewter racism right there. It's like, okay,
so that's a double standard?
Well, then clearly you're a racist, because when a white guy does it, you got no problem with it at all. And when a black guy does it, you're completely fuck the black guy. You know what I mean? You don't think you're a racist? Come on. It's so obvious.
It's very obvious. And that's the thing that we're trying to like I say, we can't change the way people are racist at the moment. You know what I'm saying? It's something that's not tangible that we can do right now. We can raise awareness to it. We can't change how people have been wired. But we can change the system. We can change the way we're being, you know, tangible things. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that people need to know, that, you know, we're trying to make this better for everybody, not just one demographic of people. Because, you know, if, you know, when black people stop getting oppressed in this country, everybody will stop getting oppressed in this country. You know what I'm saying? Because the lower class gets it not as bad, but just as much, you know? You know, we're not, because there's a subconscious fear of black people in this country, you know? Just like how they glorify cops on the TV, they demonize black people on the TV.
Absolutely.
You know? Putting them on the front pages of the newspapers, putting them on the blast for any little crime they, and then you don't see that when it, you know, vice versa when it comes to white people.
No, there's even on the news, guys.
And that subconscious fear,
sorry,
when police roll up to black people, it's there, and they shoot them, and they kill them. And that's fucked up, big time, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the whole populace, you're in their way, they're going to get you. Whether you're white, black, tan, whatever you are, they're going to get you if you stand in their way, you know? And the oppression that the lower class and minorities get in this country, specifically to exploit them, because this country's always had needed somebody to exploit, you know? We had slavery, and, you know, the communists, terrorists,
yeah,
whatever, you know,
to be an enemy,
constantly,
right?
Yeah, you constantly put labels on people.
Yeah,
I'm sure that was tough for you after 9/11.
Yeah, it was real tough, you know what I'm saying? It's still tough to this day because, like, you know, Islamophobia is getting, like, very widespread, like, big time, you know?
And I've
seen it more and more now than I did
And what's worse is when you see someone that someone who's in alignment with an understanding of supremacy, but then exhibits Islamophobia, right? So they'll understand, you know, supremacy and racism, but then they'll come right back with Islamophobia, and it's like, God damn it, you're just, you know, you don't get it. But let's try and wind it down. And I wanted to just sort of thank you, Basim, for being on the show.
Well, thank you, really man. Appreciate
your time.
You know.
And I want to
thanks for everything, not just being on the show, Basim, but you know, dude, thanks for like. Standing up for
agreed.
Peace and
yeah, I'll continue to do what I, you know what I do. You know what I'm saying? This is just it's just you know what I feel is right. You know I'm always going to continue to do what's right. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to falter from that. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna have justice. We've already won. It's just a matter of when.
I love it.
You know what I'm
saying?
I
love it.
And to my heroes.
Yeah.
So let's,
like
let's,
I say, man, we're doing it for everybody. We're not just doing it for a certain demographic. Police are going to live better under this. You know what I'm saying? Their children are going to live better.
Agreed.
Everybody will benefit from this movement besides the people that are exploiting us.
Yeah.
They're the ones that won't benefit.
And
so,
that's a good reminder for white people that, you know, white people, you're listening, tell your friends that the pitch to this is that you're going to be a better person. You're going to feel whole and complete. And it's not just about elevating Black Lives Matter. It's not taking anything away from white people. It's about just a just and better world. And when you don't live with that implicit bias and ingrained fear of people of color, you're going to be a lot happier. You really are.
Yeah, I mean, we're not against white people. You know, we're against
no, of course
people.
Not.
Absolutely.
That's big, the total difference. You know, there are way more good white people than they are bad white people.
We just got to start speaking up. White people just start speaking up more. Start talking, white people. My God. All right, so let's wrap it up. Just remind everyone that it's Basim Masri, and he's at Twitter, BASSEM_MASRI, Basim Masri. We also have a PayPal fund for him, BasimMasriFTP@gmail.com. And Basim, I always end with this quote, and I think that I would ask you to listen to this and know that when I say this, I mean you, okay? So one person can change the world. Love with no limits, feel everything. Our intensity is not a fault but a superpower. Help, don't hinder. Support, don't supplant. Cooperate, don't co-opt. Solidarity, not charity. Reveal, don't conceal our truth. Take action, make mistakes, learn, retool, do better. And that last part's for white people, but I'm thinking of you. One person can change the world, and you're one of those people. And there's a lot of people that are changing the world. And I would say for white folks that are listening to this, get active, get educated, speak up, start engaging.
And my white folk message is always the same, too. So I'll start to end with it as well, just like you are, Drew. Mine is very, very simple, is listen, learn, love.
Yep.
Y'all could have said it no better, you know what I'm saying?
We're going to be good.
Terrific. Yeah. Well, thank you guys both for being on the show. I appreciate it. So we went kind of long. I might produce this and upload it today. I'm going to be speaking with Sean, so maybe we've been off the air for a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll get two episodes in 48 hours. But tomorrow I'm going to talk to Sean about specifically white people in this movement and protest actions and what we need to do.
Yeah, I think
and,
we did this the right way today to take all of the strengths that Basim brings and talk about those things. Because I think that white privilege, Drew, is just kind of like the title of this. Because it's two white guys, and we want people to know that. But, you know, when you bring Basim in, this is the way to do it exactly we did today, to draw from all of his experiences and intelligence of where he's been. And
appreciate you all, man. You know, I really do. And for the, you know, for the white folks that are standing up, you know, we know that, you know, he's put in bad positions, you know what I'm saying, cared about their children or their neighbor.
Yeah.
They will be participating with this as well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No matter their skin color, because human life is more precious than anything we got materialistic in this world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we need to put that in our forefront before power, before money, before anything else, so that we can all live as equals and we can, you know, really, really be the country that we're supposed to be, that we were taught to be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this is all that we were trying to be, man. We just want what was advertised.
And we're all the same color in the dark, and we all bleed red.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So, any other narrative besides that is just trying to falter away from justice.
Yep.
We will not have it. We're not going to let it work because we're not going to let it progress. It's going to be stopped in its tracks. And that's what we've been doing. And we've been effective at it, and we're going to keep continuing to do what we're going to do, what we have to do. We're going to keep making people uncomfortable so that we can all be comfortable.
Thanks, Basim, for everything. Appreciate it. Thanks, Drew.
Well said. And
it's a good stocking
stuffers for my wife.
Hey, and listen, both you guys have a great holiday and a happy new year. Thanks for all your efforts and work. I'll ping you both on Twitter when I post this up. Thanks,
awesome.
Guys.
Awesome, Bassam. Thanks. You were awesome.
Thanks,
appreciate
you guys.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay.